Hello, welcome to the 7th Peloponnesos International Film Festival, home edition this year, unfortunately. Thank you for being with us, even from home today. And thank you for your film, The Abolitionists. I don't know if there's something you would like to tell the audience before we start the interview.
The global struggle against human sex trafficking, labor trafficking, all of it is connected to the strain of slavery, of the transatlantic slave trade. And, my mother always reminds me that, we can talk about different people groups who have been enslaved. So it's not, there is formations of it at different times. So I just wanted it to be connected to that same
Yeah, there is a link.
universal struggle.
Yeah, thank you for that. So, why did you choose this particular topic to talk about? Modern slavery, trafficking, prostitution, sex tourism, and especially in this area of the world, Southeast Asia, where it is obvious, we all know about it. I mean, why did you choose this?
Well, I wish I could say it's a short answer. I will try to be quick. You're basically talking about my backstory. I also wish I could just say, oh, I made an intellectual decision and thought it was a good idea, but that is what it was, but not really. What happened is a sequence of events in my life that were like aha moments that kind of were, slow down moments, kind of very profound and deep experiences that kind of started adding up. If you want my honest opinion, I feel like it chose me. I had been I was teaching acting in Hollywood, and I went to a party at Christmas time around 2012 and met a woman who was a nurse in Northern California, and a lot of women and children who were victims of human sex trafficking kept coming into the hospital. And she started, researching and trying to get to the bottom of what was happening, and told me that there was no kind of facility to help them. And so, not just facility, but a kind of training to help them heal. And she's then decided to start an NGO. Her name is Erica Grieve, and she started this group
Yes.
called Unlikely Heroes. It's a non-government organization here in the United States. But what she wanted to do is build homes to put rescued children and women in, to rehabilitate them, to help them move through this tremendous amount of trauma, and reintegrate them. And because she was a nurse, she wanted to staff it, but she needed money and funding to do this.
Yeah,
She told me
definitely.
some hor yeah, so she told me some horror stories, because not only at that time, I think they were trying to do start a home in the Philippines, and she told me a horror story, and I was assaulted by the story and moved and emotional, and so I said, what can I do to help? I knew a few people who were cinematographers, cameramen, directors. I set up a bunch of interviews with them, with her, and they all wanted money. And she said to me, Christina, I can't pay them. All the money has to go to the girls. I said, of course. And I had told them this before they had their meetings. Of course, they didn't listen to me. But anyway, that was the moment after that day when I thought this would make a great documentary. Because there's other people out there like me who had never really understood what was going on, and who have this part of them that wants to know, which is what I had, this thing like, how can this be happening, in this modern world we live in? I had no grid for it. So then that started the journey. And then a few years later, I had a lot of money that I got from selling some property back in New York. I was going to produce a play I was going to be in, and I just decided to do this instead. And
Okay.
then that started me on the journey. Southeast Asia, I started meeting these people because I'm a Democrat, but I'm also a devout Christian, and I started meeting people within the Christian community who are, you know, activists very engaged in this cause. And that's what brought me to, I went on a missions trip with one of these groups. And then one group knew another group, and then that group knew another group. And the people in the movie were people I met on these trips. So it was like I was being brought there. So that's really kind of the backstory, if that makes any sense.
Well,
and then I made that first trip.
I say it makes perfect sense to me. I couldn't imagine any other way of deciding to film such a harsh reality. Because, you know, it's what you said about COVID. We have listened about it, but we know about the situation in this particular area of the world, about trafficking and everything. But what I found really striking about the movie was the details. I didn't know so much, and I didn't want to know. There's a point in the movie where someone says that we don't want to talk about people's trauma. We don't want to hear about it. We read it in the newspapers and we just ignore it. And that's what moved me in this film particularly. But then this is not only the case there, unfortunately. This has been the case in Europe as well during the crisis, during the refugee crisis in 2015. And this has been the case, as far as I know, in North America, where people move from Mexico or Central America to North America. And I would like to ask you, what do you think about that? Do you think that the politicians actually ignore the situation on purpose? They turn a blind eye?
Well, as you see in the film, it's... when I first heard about this, I was enraged. And I thought, why is the government... There should be a task force in every city, in every town. This is clearly connected to organized crime. This is insane that this is not being attacked aggressively in a way that is more formative. I met a one of the NGOs that we courted between 2000. I went on the first trip I made, as I mentioned in my backstory. I filmed and I came home and I realized I didn't have the movie. So I spent a year currying favor with different organizations, NGOs, so that I could follow them, finding out this one and researching them and talking to them. And all these different NGOs that do anti-trafficking work kind of specialize in different areas. Some do undercover work, some do prosecution, some do, so they all kind of favor certain things. But during that time, I met this one man who works at A21, who I won't say his name because I didn't ask, get his permission to say it. But I said to him, how much of this criminal industry is being prosecuted in Southeast Asia? He goes, probably about 1%.
Yeah, we don't even
That's an epic fail. Epic failure, 1%. So, I mean, we start going into some of the reasons that's the case. One of the groups that we followed is now doing anti-trafficking work in the Mideast, because that struggle, that civil war, that thing, what's going on with ISIS, she believes that ISIS is funding a lot of what they do with human sex trafficking. So she's involved in anti-trafficking work there, because if you think about it, the Mideast is probably the region in the globe that is kind of being traumatized with that risk groups in the same way that Southeast Asia was in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So it makes sense, because these criminal industries or these people in these war-torn areas are at risk for this kind of stuff, either from outside forces or from internal forces. So, I mean, I think that the way to attack this problem, and then when you talked about Mexico, by the way, you know, that's a very, in that area, trafficking is really powerful, human sex trafficking. A lot of people leaving. I spoke to one woman, they're running from it. And this is what, you know, I take issue with the way our government is handling it. They're running from it. They're not you know, this organized crime, you know, so it's, I mean, a lot of the reason I believe that this isn't being dealt with to this extreme that it needs to be dealt with is basically, I don't know what other way to put it, but systemized misogyny or abuse of children's human rights. I mean, it's impossible not to go there. It's impossible not to start thinking that. But what I found very inspiring is meeting all these Christians, because there's so many horrible stereotypes about Christians, people who really are, who to me are heroes of their faith, of my faith, who are not small-minded, who are fighting really, you know, with God's love to end it, and really fighting against all odds, a tremendous danger to themselves. It needs to be on the docket with every government in every city, in every country, everywhere. I mean, I recently watched something where it is a problem in Athens. I didn't realize that it's a problem in your country. Yeah.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. We just don't know about it.
But that's something else I learned. Each country, it's like the personality of trafficking changes. It kind of morphs into or amalgamates into the culture, the society, and the political mores of that country. So it looks different in different places. So that's important to understand. I initially was like, oh, I have to be this big expert on all of it. No, I don't, because it took me 5 years to really have some sense of what was happening there. Do you know what I'm saying? So I would be hubris to think that I knew exactly what it looks like in other places. But I can tell you that when I spoke to these anti-traffickers there, they're beginning to see similarities in different places and in terms of the causes and conditions that lead to it, or in terms of the lack of action that needs to be. I mean, everybody was saying when I was shooting them, said people are getting educated. People, it's on people's you know, grid now what it is. Now people have to take action. That's the next step.
That's what I would think as a solution, actually, education, because people are literal there, and that's a huge problem. They do not know. But then it's not that simple. It's more complicated than that. In any case, because we don't have much time, I would like to ask you, what's your aim with this film? I mean, you are trying to inform us about the situation, you're trying to move us in a way, or what would you like people to do after watching this film? At least at the extent, to the certain extent they can take action in a way. Because,
well, for me, I know for myself, I wanted people educated. I wanted them to understand it more. And I wanted them to get activated that it mattered to them. And if they could take some kind of action to combat it, be it financing. We have a page on our website.
It's lovely.
Yeah. The New Abolitionists, plural, DOC, the abbreviation for documentary.com. And you can go to the What Can I Do page, and you can involve yourself with the three organizations that did not want to be anonymous. So you can fund them. You can go on a trip. You can, there's other organizations out there also, like Unlikely Heroes, A21. I'm trying to think of any other organization that I can think of off the top of my head, but any kind of, anytime you're in a position where you can put any kind of political or social awareness out there about it, is valuable and important. I mean, I just had one meeting at a party and it radicalized my whole life for 5 years. So, and I didn't make the decision about what I wanted to do right away. It took time. I had to sit on it and figure out, you know? So I think everybody has to search their own hearts, and maybe they're helping sponsor a child who's at risk, you know? Yeah. Maybe that's an option. Maybe it's contributing to the work of one of these groups. Maybe it's getting out in the field and doing some of this work. So there you go. Those are some of my suggestions.
Thank you very much for your alternatives. And then a last question that's more philosophical, and I love it, actually. You've been talking a lot about trauma. Actually, you've raised many issues about Christianity, about gender equality, about so much I would like to discuss with you, but time is limited, unfortunately. But you've been talking about trauma, and there is that point in the film where someone says, the only way to heal trauma is to talk about it. And I have this feeling that in today's society, we do not talk about trauma. And I think that cinema does so. So would you say that you are trying to heal trauma in a way, the trauma of the society with this film?
Lies, wounds, and trauma. You know, when you get really good therapy, that's what you're working on. And the Greeks know all about this, right? You invented theater, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm half Greek. I know. My mother's the Greekest Greek that I know. I mean, I don't know. There's a whole country of you guys. But I mean, you know, so you understand the power of theater. You look at yourself and it liberates you to examine those parts of yourself that come up. And then what's the concept of catharsis, right? But that's what you keep returning to that event. You untangle the lies, you know, you untangle or examine those wounds. And then those traumatic events that somehow create patterns that don't serve us, that are self-destructive, that hurt us. And it takes time, right? We spend our lives unraveling these issues, you know? I mean, I think, yeah. And that's one of the things that was powerful for me about the movie is to think, because I've had some traumas in my life, but to think about children experiencing this level of betrayal. And it's, I don't even know if you can sit back and not care about it deeply. Yeah. Once you know it's there and it's happening in this modern world we live in, it's outrageous. It's unacceptable. And yeah. It's vile. It's evil. I mean, I can go on and on about how vile and disgusting it is. So you can be stopping it in your own life. Any kind of generational trauma in your life, or any misogyny that's systemized in your family dynamic, or any abuse of children that you know. I mean, any ending of it somewhere in front of you is a step towards cleaning it up, right?
Yeah, definitely. And the worst aspect for me is that they actually, it's a vicious cycle. Children get abused, for example, and then their partners abuse them in other lives, and it repeats itself, and they think they deserve it. So if you mistreat a child, then its whole life is pretty much predetermined.
I believe that therapy and counseling, I'm going to speak personally. Therapy changed my life. Yeah. I believe in the power of self-work. And I think that I have incredible hope for these children and these women and these families, that they can transform their lives. If they believe they can, they will. And they do. A lot of them have transformed their lives. So there's hope. It's not a negative, but we have to take up the work of that. And it's hard. It's brutal, bone-crunching work. You know, but I mean, I can speak for myself. All the self-work I've done for myself has made me a cleaner, healthier person than I could ever have imagined. So I know for a fact that can happen for other people. It's not hopeless.
Sure, there is hope. And thank you for putting emphasis on that. Thank you for this eye-opening interview. Yeah, it was, because all those, the website and the alternatives you've proposed us, and the way you've talked about the problem, I think it will be really eye-opening for many people, especially in Greece, because people do not talk about those issues, as I said before.